like to add my welcome to that which was expressed earlier, especially if you're visiting with us. About 2 weeks ago, we had a lesson looking back into the Bible as a historical document and focusing on some important biblical customs, particularly those that have become more obscure over time, and explain them and hopefully provide greater insight as we read the Old and New Testaments to what is actually being talked about, given the fact, as I said, that these customs have in many ways been eclipsed or have faded with time. We're going to do something like that similarly today, but from kind of a different perspective. Now, depending upon where you get your news, and there is a wide variety, I believe, in the way different news outlets cover different stories, things are pretty tough. And again, depending upon the outlet, I mean, climate crisis, racism, sexism, homophobia, homelessness, border crisis, fentanyl crisis, opioid crisis, etc. In fact, even at a local level, you know, sometimes the behavior of people, sometimes even the behavior of kids. A classic example, you go into the supermarket, and here's this kid just throwing a fit, and the parents just, mom, you know, I'm not really doing anything. Just bad times. Let's see if you recognize the quote, or see if you resonate with the quote. Kids, young adults, spoiled adults, whatever. The children now love luxury. They have bad manners. Contempt for authority. Show disrespect for elders. Love chatter. Children are now tyrants. Contradict their parents. Tyrannize their teachers. And you go, yeah. Socrates, 400 BC, 2400 years ago. How about that? That which has been is what will be. That which is done is that which will be done. There's nothing new under the sun. Is there anything of which it may be said, see, this is new? It has already been in ancient times before us. You might recognize that quote. Solomon, predating Socrates by yet another 500 years, around 950 BC, from Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verses 9 and 10. So again, can we learn from history? Hopefully, yes. I've got several quotes here from people in the world. Samuel Clemens, also known as Mark Twain. History doesn't repeat itself, but often rhymes. Winston, George Sataya. Those who fail to learn from history are doomed to repeat it. Also attributed to Winston Churchill. How about this one by William Wordsworth? Life is divided into three terms. That which was, which is, which will be. Past, present, future. Let us learn from the past to profit by the present, and from the present to live better in the future. Sounds pretty good. Can we learn from the history? Well, the biblical writers believe that. 1 Corinthians chapter 10, the first 11 verses. Let me kind of highlight at least a couple of them. Paul writing to the Corinthians, moreover, brethren, I do not want you to be unaware of all that our fathers were under the cloud, passed through the sea, of course, referring to the Exodus out of Egypt of the Israelites. Verse 5, with most of them, God was not well pleased. Verse 6, now these things became our examples. Verse 11, now all these things happened to them as examples, and they were written for our admonition. Learning from history. So, historically speaking, and I have to give Cheryl the credit for today's lesson, because she suggested this one. We start off with God's chosen people, starting with Abraham and his descendants, eventually culminating in Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, whose name was changed to Israel. Of course, you have the nation of Israel, his descendants, chosen for special favor, as quote-unquote God's chosen people, eventually released from Egyptian bondage into the promised land. And as history unfolds, lots of cycles, if you will. Faithful for a while, fell away. Faithful for a while, fell away, etc. You can read that, a lot of that, in the book of Judges, until they started getting kings. Of course, Saul, first king, David, second king, Solomon, third king. That kind of brings us up to roughly around 900 BC again. Solomon passes from the scene. Northern and southern kingdoms split up. Northern kingdom, which Isaiah addresses to some degree, eventually we'll see falls to the Assyrians. Time goes by. Jeremiah sent primarily to the remaining southern kingdom, nation of Judah. They eventually fall to the Babylonians. Want to focus a little bit on these two prophets and their time and the behavior and attitudes of the people they were addressing. Again, Isaiah predominantly to the nation of Israel, Jeremiah predominantly to the nation of Judah. Of course, as we mentioned, Isaiah, roughly 700 BC, gave them warnings, and to some degree Judah as well, before the nation of Israel fell to the Assyrian Empire. Jeremiah, roughly 100 years later, 600 BC, sent to prophesy against Judah before they fell to the Babylonian Empire. Okay, so that's sort of the historical setting. Going into the book of Isaiah, here's what he had to say, or here's what God had to say through Isaiah to the nation of Israel. Now, I've got several different categories on the slide with some verses, so we're just going to hit these relatively quickly. This will be posted to the website within about a week or so. The charts, if you will, if you want to retain the charts. The charge of just lacking knowledge, not really knowing about God and His Word. Isaiah addresses that in a number of passages, to include Isaiah 5:13, 17:10, and several verses in chapter 43, beginning with verse 21. So just lack of knowledge. Just didn't know. Should have, but didn't. Lovers of pleasure and lovers of alcohol, according to Isaiah chapter 47, verse 8. And Isaiah 5, verse 22, as well as 28, verse 7. Wise in their own eyes. They thought they were pretty smart. Pretty wise. Isaiah chapter 3, verse 8, 5, verse 21. And not just the people. Rulers who led people astray. Who did not dispense justice toward those who were guilty, as well as being unjust or unjust to those who were innocent. Isaiah chapter 5, verse 23, and 9, verse 16. Rebellious. Proclaim their sin like Sodom. Do not hide it. Isaiah 3, verse 9. As if that wasn't bad enough, how about calling evil good and calling that which was really good evil? Isaiah chapter 5, verse 20, and 32, verse 8. And if that wasn't bad enough, how about run to evil and shed innocent blood? Isaiah chapter 9, verse 17. And Isaiah 59, verse 7.
pretty bad. Pretty bad. Loving pleasure. Thought they were so smart. Even the rulers. Just open rebellion. Proudly proclaiming their sin. Condemning that which was good as evil.
Pretty bad. That was Isaiah's message to the nation of Israel, predominantly. About 100 years later, Jeremiah comes on the scene, levies charges against Judah. Sadly, pretty much more of the same. They spoke falsely that, God won't do anything to you. You're okay. You're fine. Keep doing what you're doing. God is pleased with what you're doing. Jeremiah chapter 5, verse 12, 23, verse 17. Forsaken God. Turn their back on God to go off and worship at their time idols, false idols, false gods. Jeremiah chapter 1, verse 16. Yeah, God's chosen people now worshiping Baal and Ashtaroth and Molech and Chemosh and all kinds of false gods. Jeremiah chapter 4, 22. Talk about being wise in their own eyes, walk in their own counsel, same thing. Jeremiah chapter 7, verse 24. Jeremiah 8, verse 8, and others. And of course, being wise in their own eyes, pretty much did what they want to do. Unrestrained, rebellious, not ashamed at all to commit what the Lord considered as abominations. Jeremiah chapter 3, verse 13 and verse 25. Again, Jeremiah chapter 5, verse 23 and others. Deceivers, slanderers, liars, speaking falsehood. Jeremiah chapter 9, verse 3 through 5. God's people. God's people. God's chosen people. Even after having seen what God did to the nation of Israel, roughly 100 years prior, by the word of the prophets. Yeah, kept doing it. Bad times. Can we draw some parallels between then and now? And again, depending on the news outlet that you listen to. Okay, so we talked about lack of knowledge of God and His Word and what God's Word actually says in the Scriptures. Well, do we see that today with various religious denominations teaching, all claiming to follow the Bible, all claiming to believe in Jesus, but all teaching all kinds of different contradictory things? A general lack of knowledge in the culture, if you will. I mean, some people try to make the point, and I think it's a fairly valid point, that this country being founded predominantly by people who were fleeing religious persecution in Europe, still retained a lot of that, I'll say, Judeo-Christian ethics, and had those kinds of ethics in daily practice as well as embodied in some of the guiding documentation of the day. Declaration of Independence, to hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created. Oh, there's a concept, created. General lack of knowledge, of course, we've seen ethics sort of decay over time, I guess is the point I really want to make here. School prayer, no longer, permitted in school, etc. In general, a just lack of knowledge about God and His Word today. How about lovers of pleasure? Actually, if you go to Colossians chapter 3, verse 5, you'll see where greed, covetousness, is equated to idolatry. Do we have a lot of, pagan statues of strange, weird gods around us? Normally not, unless you happen to come into like a vicinity of like a Buddhist temple or a Hindu temple, etc., but generally not. But do we have somewhat rampant materialism today? Lots of emphasis on entertainment, and of course, a lot of forms of entertainment, nothing wrong in and of themselves,
but a lot of emphasis on it. Alcohol, drugs, both legal and illegal. Pornography, a lot of things you can get on the internet, etc. Lovers of pleasure. And you go, yeah, yeah, like just today.
Just like then.
Yeah, as I said, we may not have, you know, the ancient idols, but we sure got modern ones today to take their place as our objects of attention and adoration and pursuit and etc.
You may recall the phrase earlier, walked in their own counsel, wise in their own eyes. And of course, you can see a lot of that with modern theories of evolution. And of course, indeed, if we're here just from natural processes and we are the highest life form on the planet, so to speak, therefore we can decide what we want to do because humanity is sort of like in charge. There is no higher God, so that makes us the highest being, so to speak. God. Situation ethics, a lot of things under liberalism. Or as Proverbs chapter 3, verse 7 says, be not wise in your own eyes. Think you have it all figured out? No. Fear the Lord and turn away from evil. Wise in our own eyes. You may recall earlier we talked about the rulers even. Not just the populace, but the rulers leading people astray. Well, do we see signs of that today?
Sure.
No-fault divorce, gay marriage, legalization of drugs, legalization of gambling, all kinds of political corruption. Right? Then and now. Again, depending upon the news outlet that you listen to. Of course, I say that it's like no matter which outlet you listen to, you can find, you know, charges of political corruption as an example against the other party, regardless of which outlet you listen to. Let's keep going. Then and now. Remember that phrase, proclaim their sin like Sodom, or calling evil good? I love the euphemisms we have today. Pro-choice. Sounds good. Basically, it's a euphemism for killing your baby. Out. Pride Week, Pride Month. Of course, referring to, you know, LGBTQ plus and other letters I can't remember. Latest one, which really gets me. Gender-affirming care. That sounds great, doesn't it? Gender-affirming care. Dig into that, basically, and I hate to say it this way, but it stands for like chemical castration and genital mutilation. Of kids included. Gender affirming care. Sounds good. It isn't very good. How about calling good evil or slandering those who are good? And of course, we get charges of being racist, sexist, fascist, homophobic, transphobic, etc. And so, at least according to some news outlets, you know, concerned parents going to school board meetings being singled out as being domestic terrorists. Seriously? How about running to evil and shedding blood? We talked about that a few moments ago. Wasn't that long ago? Last summer? Summer before? Whatever. Riots, arson, looting. And, of course, abortion, which we've already mentioned. Then and now. So in some ways, not that much different. Yeah, we may have modernized some things, but still, not that much different. So, what happened to them? Well, as we've hinted, Isaiah 13, verses 3 through 9. Behold, the day of the Lord comes, cruel with both wrath and fierce anger to lay the land desolate, and he will destroy its sinners from it. That happened to the nation of Israel roughly around 720 BC, as I said. Fell into the hands of the Assyrians, who took them captive, scattered them throughout the empire, which was their policy. Because if you scatter the people everywhere,
chances are they will lose their identity, not retain their sense of nationalism, and potentially cause your problems, rise up against you in revolt. That's what happened to them. Scattered across the Assyrian Empire, basically never to return as a people. How about the southern nation of Judah? Well, as we said, they fell to the Babylonians in 587 BC. Along with the city and the temple that was destroyed, taken captive by them for at least 70 years. Some of them returned. Not all. In fact, most of them were killed in the rebellion. Some escaped. And those that remained, a few left in the land, but most of them taken off to captivity, that survived. So, given all of that, what can we learn? Several lessons. I think one lesson we can learn is about the nature of God in a positive way, if I could use that term. So recognize that what happened to the nation of Israel and what happened to the nation of Judah happened after multiple attempts to reach out to them. Over hundreds of years. I mean, all the way back to the time of Judges. All the way back to the time of the wilderness wanderings, I mean, quite frankly. According to Ezekiel chapter 33, God is characterized as being merciful, gracious, long-suffering, abounding in goodness, truth, showing mercy, forgiving iniquity, transgression, and sin. Sorry, that's Exodus 34, verses 6 and 7. Ezekiel 33:11 says, I have no pleasure in the death of the wicked, but that the wicked turn away, turn from his way and live. Turn from your evil ways, for why should you die, O house of Israel? I like this one. This is from Jesus, Matthew chapter 23, verse 37. And of course, this is near the end of his ministry. If I remember correctly, he's in Jerusalem looking out over the city, rebellious city. And of course, being deity, he remembers all this history. Oh, Jerusalem, the one who kills the prophets, stones those who are sent to her. How often I wanted to gather your children together. This is the part I really like. As a hen gathers her chicks under her wings, but you were not willing. Nature of God that shows patience, long-suffering, not wanting that any should perish, but that all should come to a knowledge of the truth. You know, there have been portrayals of God, and I can't remember who it was, but basically back in colonial times, at least one of the notable preachers at the time, tried to portray God as having some sense of glee in sending people to hell. Not according to the Bible, not according to passages like this, not according to patiently trying to work, for example, historically, with the Jews, with the nation of Israel, with the nation of Judah, for centuries, until it's like, can't have any more of it, and eventually punished as a result. And yet, even despite they're ignoring all the warnings, going off into idolatry, apostatizing, etc., all of that, God still held out hope for them. Ultimate hope, ultimate salvation with the coming of what we would know of as the Messiah. Isaiah, again back to Isaiah, chapter 7, verse 4, prophecy. Therefore, looking out into the future, roughly 700 years into the future. Therefore, the Lord himself will give you a sign. Behold, the virgin shall conceive and bear a son, and shall call his name Emmanuel. Does that sound familiar? He's giving them some degree of hope, ultimately. Likewise, Isaiah, another messianic prophecy, chapter 9, verses 6 and 7. For unto us a child is born, son is given, government will be on his shoulder, his name will be called. So, what's he going to be called, or known as, or known for? Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace, for the increase of his government and peace there should be no end upon the throne of David and over his kingdom, to order it and establish it with judgment and justice from that time forward and even forever. Something similar over in Jeremiah chapter 31, 33, and 34. Talking about a new covenant and a new law where Jehovah will be their God and they shall be my people. Speaking of the future. No more, you know, teaching each man his brother, because they were born into a covenant relationship under Judaism. But in the new covenant, you will believe it and accept it and obey it and have already been, to some degree, taught about it. For I will forgive their iniquity and their sin I will remember no more. And of course we see that fulfilled within the New Testament, within the establishment of the church, Acts 2. Likewise, Hebrews chapters 8 through 10, established via Jesus as the mediator of the new covenant. So, bottom line of all that, even as sinful as they were, God still held out some hope of promise for salvation for them. Rob made the point this morning. Another lesson. God can deal with nations. Now, we think in terms of, you know, individual salvation, which is true. But as we see historically, we see that, you know, God certainly can deal nationally. Jeremiah chapter 18, verses 7 through 10. The instant I speak concerning a nation and concerning a kingdom, to pluck it up, pull down, destroy it, if that nation against whom I have spoken returns from its evil, I will relent of the disaster that thought to bring upon it. Conversely, and the instant I speak concerning a nation and concerning a kingdom to build and to plant, if it does evil in my sight so that it does not obey my voice, then I will relent concerning the good with which I said I would benefit it. The Lord can deal with nations. Which is not too surprising. Proverbs chapter 14, verse 34. Righteousness exalts a nation, but sin is a reproach to any people. Then and now. Here's one that kind of hits pretty home. The good old days. You know, we look, as I said, we look around about us and we listen to social media and news broadcasts, whatever. And we come to the realization that things are falling apart. Things are terrible. Multiple crises. Don't know how it's even held together. You know, we're just careening toward disaster. Be careful. Ecclesiastes, back to Solomon, chapter 7, verse 10. Do not say, why were the former days better than these? For you do not inquire wisely concerning this. Again, sometimes we get wrapped around the current news broadcast with some degree of short-term memory loss. No, I said that wrong. Long-term memory loss. Lamenting the past. How about economic hardships during the Great Depression? That honestly was not all that long ago. How about all the modern-day medical advancements? Hardly hear of people today, at least in this country. Polio? Diphtheria? Whooping cough? Dying? Being scarred for life? Some of the modern medical advances that I hear people like, you know, cataract surgery and hip replacement and knee replacement and heart replacement. It's like, whoa, medicines, etc. Pretty cool. How about overt racism? Not that long ago. In terms of, you know, really, truly white supremacy or race riots or political riots or student riots. Not that long ago. That's also part of our past. So you know, we tend to look back and, you know, we tend to remember the good stuff. We tend to forget about the bad stuff.
And looking back into the past. And as I said before, one of the things perhaps, I didn't put it into a chart that we should probably keep in mind, is when we, if we do tend to spend a lot of time, social media, news broadcasts, internet, whatever, a lot of it is, regardless of the source or regardless of the bias, based on crisis, right? Based on attracting viewers to the channel, which more often than not is better done when something horrific is done, portrayed, reported on, you know, plane crashes as an example. And yeah, one plane crash, 300 people die, tragic, got it. 300,000 people dying from car accidents. Yeah. Doesn't make the news. Anyway, be careful about fixating on the news, because it can drive you crazy with what's going on out there. And there is a lot going on out there. But again, we tend to focus on the negative, or at least the news tends to focus on the negative, and we can get sucked into that as well. Other lessons. Last lesson. Regardless of whether you were in the nation of Israel, regardless of whether you were in the nation of Judah, or regardless of whether you're in the nation of the United States of America, or some other country, like we hear problems in India with prince and the dominant Hindu culture persecuting Christians. We hear, you know, news from Malawi with some of the internal alleged Church of Christ preachers and others, you know, stirring up trouble. Regardless, takeaway message, be faithful regardless. Matthew chapter 5, verse 14, you are the light of the world. As the illustration over here in the bottom right-hand corner, you are the light of the world, let your light shine for others that you, they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven. In contrast to fixating on social media, how about this one as an aid? Philippians chapter 2, verses 14 and 15. Similarly, do all things without complaining and disputing, blameless and harmless, without fault, in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation. And you say, yep, we sure are. It's like, well, wait a minute. This is like 2,000 years ago. New Testament times. Crooked and perverse generation. Among whom you shine as lights in the world. Be faithful regardless. 1 Peter chapter 2, verses 11 and 12. Beloved, I beg you as... Oh, hold on a second. I beg you as sojourners and pilgrims, abstain from fleshly lusts. Similar thought. Let me go back one. Similar thought over in Hebrews chapter 11, in the little picture here, verse 13. Talking about the faithful across multiple centuries. Died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them and embraced them from afar, and having confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. We sing this song, this world is not my home. I'm just passing through. All this is temporary. That's something else good to keep in mind. And finally, Galatians chapter 9, chapter 6, verse 9. Let us not grow weary while doing good. For in due season we shall reap if we do not lose heart. Similarly, 2 Thessalonians chapter 3, verse 13. There you go. A little bit of a history lesson again. As I said, we may have modernized a lot over the thousands of years since, for example, the Old Testament was written. But in some ways, we're still human. And we still have our own think-sos. And we still often want to rely on our own wisdom or satisfy our own pleasures or do what we want to do. And certainly we live in a culture where a lot of that's going on. But is it really all that much different than what has gone on for thousands of years? In form, perhaps, but when you look at the basics, no, that's it. Nations come, nations go. Good comes, good goes, evil rises, etc. Nothing new under the sun, as Solomon warned us. And so, as we look out amongst ourselves, I guess we have to be careful not to get so wrapped up in the day and the troubles of the day and the nightly news of the day and the crisis of the day. Because, after all, according to the scriptures, our attitude should be, we're just here temporarily, strangers and pilgrims. The lesson really hasn't talked a lot about what we might call obeying God. But in terms of, you know, offering salvation, Jesus is the Messiah, you know, believing in Jesus as the Son of God, Savior, died on the cross for our sins, as was illustrated in the Lord's Supper. You know, that opportunity is presented this morning as part of the invitation, as well as if you've sinned in a public manner, coming forward, confessing that. If you've gotten wrapped up around all the trials and tribulations of the day, maybe that's just go home and reconsider turning down the social media input, as an example. Or if you're struggling with these things, you have the opportunity to come forward as well, and we can pray with you and for you as we stand and sing.